This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Doctor in the House series. It's a Friday. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, on the line with me. How are you, George?
I am raging.
Why?
Well, I'm calmer now. Now I've got my Milo and we're logged in and I'm calmer now. But I was raging because obviously I don't get to see you face to face. That's one thing. Secondly, it's that I don't even get to sneak home to Kota Bharu to see my mum to get my big ang bao for the year.
Sneak home.
That's right.
That's okay. None of it is going to happen. So, we're going to be talking about road rage today. And, we sort of organized this interview months before thinking that it will be perfect timing given that it's Chinese New Year. Unfortunately, there's an interstate travel ban. And so a lot of us won't be going out station. However, it is still an issue that needs to be discussed, I feel, because research in Malaysia has found that not only are there 3 million, there are millions of angry drivers on our roads, we are also faring worse than countries like the US, Australia, Spain and Turkey. So the main causes of road rage are problems that we're all familiar with, including refusing to give way, failing to use indicators or even double or triple parking. So is our rude driving behavior the cause of road rage among Malaysians? Are there deeper psychosocial issues at heart of all these problems? What can we do is what we're going to be discussing today, George. I mean, have you actually come in, had a run-in with an aggressor?
Have I ever been an aggressor myself?
Oh, my God. Please don't even tell me you are. You have been?
Well, I thought the reason why we're doing this show was because recently there's a viral video that that's gone around about a female doctor who was really outraged about somebody doing a U-turn, right? Clearly, it's not just during festivities when everyone is stuck in the traffic for hours and hours. Occasionally, something that actually might trigger this. I actually got to learn about this in Haris Iskandar's Instagram. And in fact, he said something that is it's quite reflective, is that a lot of us all have issues. And then that might just stem from the inner problems rather than the actual, it's all building up. And then one snap of something, and then that road rage comes into it. What do you think, Mira?
I mean, what more at a time like this, right? A lot of us have issues now on a much deeper level dealing with the last 1 year and what's going on in the world. I cannot imagine if we all come back in full force on the road, what that would mean. Because we've always been working pretty much, many people still from home over the last 1 year, isn't it? So we've not really seen traffic come back to its actual full capacity, as it were. So it'll be interesting to understand, though. But even then, given what we've been through psychologically, there's a lot sitting deep down inside. So joining us to understand road rage a lot better today, Purvesha Jagadeesan, she's a clinical psychologist, and Dr. Ahmad Azad Abdul Rashid, he's a chief research officer at MIROS. And MIROS is the Malaysian Institute of Road Safety Research. Welcome to the show. How are both of you today?
Hello. I'm doing well. Thank you so much.
Good. Wonderful. Azad, could you paint an overall picture of road traffic accidents in Malaysia? Maybe you have latest statistics, some fatality rates, for an example.
Yeah. Well, talking about road traffic safety, road traffic accidents in Malaysia, the Department of Statistics in Malaysia has reported that road traffic crashes is the fourth causes of death among Malaysians, yeah, mm-hmm. and that is actually has been in the same trend for the past, I think, 10 years, yeah. Well, for 2020, last year, the Royal Malaysian Police PDRM has released latest statistic. We can see a reduction of crashes by 26%. And that's mainly, I think, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Mm-hmm. And correspondingly, the fatalities also dropped by 25% to 4,634. 4,634 fatalities relative to 6,167 in 2019. But if you look at the trend, it is still similar with or without COVID, because majority of the road fatality victims are motorcyclists still. about 60% plus.
Yep. Okay. Those are the road trends. Motorcyclists are the highest. Any other? What about specific periods of time? Does it go up at a certain time?
It is very correlated with the exposure. The more exposure we got, then we can see the higher the road fatality goes. So in the period of the MCO, we can see it goes down. And then when we have this a conditional MCO, mm-hmm. and it picks up back, yeah.
Okay, so not during festive seasons and things like that? Holiday season?
That's certainly, yes. If you're talking about not 2020, like the years before that, mm-hmm. Festive seasons contributes very, very big figure to the crashes.
How do we fare compared to other countries like Singapore, Thailand?
Yeah, when we're talking about comparison, if you want to compare between countries, we have to also take into consideration the denominator, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the most common index we use is the number of fatalities over 100,000 populations. So if we use that, we can see that we are actually performs better than Thailand, but Singapore performs better than us. But that simplistic comparison, we have to put it in mind, it is simplistic, yeah? Because we have also need to take into consideration the number of exposure magnitude, the actual exposure on the road, yeah? But I think we get an idea how we are progressing. Mm.
Okay. And some causes of road traffic accidents in Malaysia?
Yeah. That is the most...
Is it road conditions? I mean, we've all known about potholes, and I think George can share an experience because he went straight into a pothole and had a spleen injury, didn't you, George?
Yeah, the spleen was ruptured, the liver was torn, ended up in ICU for a while. And then
God, you were riding or were you driving?
Well, I was riding a tiny little Vespa. Just imagine I was on, Harley Davidson. And then that itself almost killed me. And then, you know, in fact, I'm really interested in finding out whether potholes contribute to a lot of fatality in our countries or not.
Mm. Well, talking about causal factors, it is difficult to dissect only one component, you know, because when crash happens, it's about interaction, mm-hmm. interaction between many causal factors. But there are studies attempted to find out what is the biggest contribution to road crashes. And it says that about 80% is related to road users' behaviors, etc. Yeah. But if you look at the experience of that George has experienced, talking about injury, if you are driving, maybe you won't get that kind of injury because, you know, if you are in a car, then you have all these technologies protecting.
If you say that motorcyclists are the most affected, exactly. Then I would think that road conditions would play a big role as well. Definitely human behavior, how the rest of us actually behave on the road in relation to the motorcyclists. Puvesha, when it comes to human behavior, what makes a good driver? Well, who would you consider a good driver?
A combination of factors, because you need technical skills, you need to know how to drive properly, you need to abide by the regulations on the road. But beyond all that, there's also a component of safety driving skills. Like, what is your definition of safety? What is your role? What is your responsibility to ensure that when you drive, it's safe for you and for those around you? I think to have that kind of mental capacity to think in that manner, I think that makes a good driver from a psychological perspective.
George?
Yeah, you know, I tell you, this is a question that all the listeners out there want to call in and ask. Who makes better driver, men or women? And who makes safer driver, men or women?
Do we have statistics, Azad?
If you look at the statistics, glaringly, most of the victims are male. Yeah. But that statistics, we need to look at the denominator. Maybe we don't know for sure that maybe more males are drivers. I don't know. But those are from statistics point of view. But if you look at the what makes a good driver, I think it would be more comfortable to say who are the better driver instead of good or worse, safer instead of safe. You know, when looking at something absolute, it would be difficult. So okay. We are talking about something relative. So from our research, we can see that to answer questions of what makes a safer driver, we need two components. First is the component of fit to drive. And then the second component is the competency. We need both. So if you have good skills, you know how to maneuver and all those things, which is the competency component. But if you are not fit to drive, you have physical illness, you know, have emotional destruction and that kind of thing, you know, cognitive problems. So you cannot be safe as well.
Okay. So let's just say we have competency and skill sorted out. Everybody's equal. Yep. Let's assume that. Let's look at the emotional factors that come into play when someone gets behind the wheel, Purvesha. What's actually happening emotionally?
So now I can also answer the whole idea of whether it's more males or more females. It's beyond that. It's about how one person is wired. What kind of issues do they, you know, have they faced it that day, or what issues are they facing for that day, and what are the coping mechanisms like? The researchers identified that more men tend to be more aggressive than women. They're quite overt in the expression of anger compared to women. And we know that road rage is mostly the idea of anger being displaced irresponsibly on the road. That's how road rage even develops in the first place. So having said that, when you look at the emotional issues and psychological issues, it, you know, it, like Dr. Azad said earlier, there was a research that IMU did with Neuros in the past, and they identified that 80% of the issues are because of human behavior and mostly because of emotional issues like anger. Anger is the ultimate factor when it comes to road rage. And when you look at the psychological and emotional reasons behind that, is that when someone has anger, and it often gets displaced on the road, and that's why it's called road rage. But what even caused them to get to that stage has a lot to do with them as an individual. So what have they dealt with throughout the day? You know, maybe they had an argument with their spouse, or had an argument with their boss or colleagues. Have they processed it before getting into the car and sitting behind those steering wheels? Have they processed it? Have they settled one before moving to the other? Or is it a carryover effect? And so, you know, when you're carrying all that anger with you, and the moment someone overtakes you, you get really mad. The projection of anger, the amount of anger that you feel at that point, does not tally with the situation that just happened in front of you. If someone just overtook you, yeah, that's it. But for someone who has got so much of anger that has not been dealt with, it just comes out completely different from a regular person.
So this Miros research was between 2009 and 2012, and they found that 18% of our registered drivers are labeled under the category of high anger drivers. And high anger meaning what, Purvesha?
High anger usually means that these individuals have very low capacity of managing their anger. So they get triggered very easily. Second is that the expression of anger is much larger. The reaction is larger.
Yeah, George.
How do you actually characterize high anger? Because I'm really interested in kind of assessing myself to see whether I'm high anger, intermediate anger or not. What sort of specific criteria do you come to that conclusion of 18% of Malaysian driver are categorized as high anger?
Dr. Azad, do you want to take
that? Well, we did, the research was 2009, 2012. So it was on epidemiological level, not clinical level, you know. So we surveyed about 5,000 drivers nationwide. And from there, we use a standardized, established questionnaire. Mm-hmm. And then from there, from previous research, we can see that certain cutoff give you a label as a high anger driver, and then you have a low anger driver as well. And I think before we go into further, we need to make some clarification here in terms of anger. aggression and road rage. Anger, feeling. Aggression is the behavior, which is the manifestation of the feeling.
And the reaction.
Exactly, yeah. And road rage, basically an extreme magnitude of the of aggression. Aggression. Yeah. So we are talking about anger here, but when you feel angry, it's not necessarily mean you are going to aggress, right? Mm-hmm. If you have good coping mechanisms, I think Purusha knows better than me in that. So we're talking about high anger driver. Literature, the research shows that those high anger driver, they are 3 to 4 times more likely to involve in aggressive driving. And they are about twice more likely to take a risk and about 1.5 times more likely to get involved in a crash. So, yeah.
Purvesha?
So I'd like to add that, you know, when you talk about anger, just like what Akaza said, anger itself is not necessarily bad. We get angry as a way to protect ourselves, to keep ourselves safe, and it's a mode of survival.
Phew, but what thank goodness. That's a consolation. I was trying to think, which one am I?
I mean, anger is more of like you identify a dangerous situation and you need to get out of it. So you get angry because, you know, something's not right. It's a form of, it's your reaction. That's quite normal to be angry. But what, when it becomes a clinical issue or it becomes a problem when your anger causes harm towards yourself or another person. So, you know, if you're someone who gets angry a lot, you're someone who gets triggered very easily, and, you know, you shoot from 0 to 100 in like within minutes in terms of your anger, then it's going to cause you a lot of physical issues. Like, you know, your BP is going to go up and you're going to have aches and pains, the unexplainable aches and pains and stuff like that. But also psychologically, it's going to mess up the way you are going to process what's happening in front of you and also deal with it. Eventually, and then that's why it comes out wrongly as aggression.
But it's interesting, isn't it? You watch in movies all the time, and somebody gets really angry, the first thing they do is jump into the car and just speed off. And it's so common. Everybody does it. George, you were worried about which category are you? You are nowhere, George. You are very, very low anger.
No, no,
don't worry. Just stay away from the potholes, right? You'll be fine. We'll come back and continue the discussion on why does road rage happen. If you have a question for us, the number to call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, on the line with me. It only means it's Friday. It's almost here. It's materializing, George. The weekend is almost here. Joining us also, Purvesha Jagadeesan, a clinical psychologist, and Dr. Ahmad Azad Abdul Rashid. He's a chief research officer at Miros. Miros is the Malaysian Institute of Road Safety Research. We're trying to find out a little bit more about anger and road rage and all of that. It's interesting that 18% of our registered drivers are labelled under the category of high anger drivers. This is based on research, three-year research from 2009 and 2012. Now, Purvesha, we spoke about, as you mentioned, right, it goes from whether or not you're angry or not, but when you get into the car, it really depends on whether or not that relates to something else, aggression, whether or not it's going to harm you or somebody else. But do aggressive behaviours become more pronounced when somebody gets behind the wheel? And that seems to be, as I was saying, in movies and all of that, you see that happening all the time. And the cliche of mild-mannered people turning into monsters behind the wheel, how do you reconcile that? I mean, some people are just, is it the fact that you feel safe in this vehicle where nobody can, you know, it's a compartment, it's a boxed up place where you feel safe and you feel you can express and do whatever you feel like?
Definitely. The car is an armor. I mean, you talk about ill-mannered, mild-mannered person who becomes a monster behind you. A mild-mannered person may not pick a fight with somebody larger or somebody who is a potential, where it may turn to be a potential harm. The person is not going to pick a fight with that other person. But once this mild-mannered person gets into the car, it's already a, you know, steel box. It's an armor. So the person's going to feel safe, protected, and also there's an element of anonymous in terms of, like, you can't really see the person's face, especially if they have on all their windows tinted and all. Like, you can't really see who this person is. There's an element of power that comes with it. So first, we're looking at it being a mark, So it protects you. Second, there's also an element of power and control. When you get behind the car, when, you know, everything is you know, you're very jumbled up or everything is quite messy in a person's life, but the moment they sit behind the steering wheel, they're in control of how their car is going to move. That element of control and power just pushes the person's boundary a bit more. They become a little bit more powerful, a little bit more confident in the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. And is there a link between ego and emotional intelligence when it comes to road rage?
Definitely.
Dyla, so you have armor, anonymity, you have power, control, and you got your ego. Wow, recipe for death. I mean, what's precisely going on here?
So, first of all, when it comes to ego, it's about having this narcissistic pride that, you know, I've got it. I've got all this power. I am now more powerful than those around me. And that's just going to make this person feel like they are above everybody else. Hence, you know, someone, a smaller car overtaking them, or maybe it's a male driver and a female driver overtaking them. This is instant rub that they feel, and they think, oh, they need to retaliate. They need to show who they are. This is the element of power comes up. Emotional intelligence is a very, very important component here. The emotional intelligence, it means that this person has the ability to understand and process their own emotions as well as understanding the emotions of another person. So to give you an example of that, so let's say if I'm driving on the road and I have high emotional intelligence or EQ, I can see in my rear view mirror that someone's just driving super fast and it's overtaking everybody and overtakes me and, you know, speeds forward. The first thing that will come into my mind if I am emotionally intelligent is that, oh, maybe this person is driving a woman who is in the midst of labor.
It's an emergency.
It's an emergency situation. That's probably how I would process it and think, oh, okay, I better slow down and let this car go. I mean, let this lady go. It's okay. No, it's all right. But someone with low emotional intelligence may look at it and think, oh, how dare he or how dare she? You know, I need to show who I am, you know, like how could they have done that? And they just go for it without realizing the impact or the consequences of the action. There's also a more biological understanding to this. We call it the amygdala hijack. So again, in that moment where someone who has low emotional intelligence and this person overtakes them or you know, flashes light at them from behind, they immediately, their brain looks at it as this is a threat and they have to deal with a threat. So as a survival, it falls back into the survival mode. So that's what the amygdala hijack does. You know, it puts you into this fight or flight mode, mm-hmm. and you think now you need to fight because it's a place to show your survival skills. And you immediately react. And your reaction is just going to be much larger or unnecessary for that situation. You're not living in a jungle. You're not fighting the gorilla. You don't really need to have that kind of reaction, but it comes up because that is what's happening inside, the innate part of us that was not able to be controlled by the emotional intelligence.
And what about those of us who fall somewhere in between where, you know, when you pass by, you don't try and say it's an emergency. You just, profanities after profanities come out. We're okay, right? We're fine. There's nothing wrong with us, right?
Does it cause harm to you and the others?
I don't know. Just maybe children sitting beside you learning new words, perhaps. I don't know.
I think that's fine.
Thank you. We don't have a problem.
It's only normal that we curse here and there, yeah.
George, you got any questions?
Well, I'm going to be a devil's advocate. I'm going to say that a lot of what we're saying here, we came up with all sorts of excuses in air quotes, that is the personality trait, it is the underlying tension, all the stress and everything like that. I think a lot of these are excuses as well. I'll give you an example, right? You know, Mira started the show saying that one of the things that all make us very angry, things like, you know, people cutting in, no indicating, and then tailgating, and then that sort of things. But when we drive down the causeway to the other side of the pond, we behave completely differently. We never double park. We never do anything because we know we cannot get away with it.
And vice versa.
So I think in a way, it is a lot of these things that when it happens, it's all all these excuses to say that, oh, it happened because I was angry, it happened because of underlying stress. That's the reason why a lot of people, you know, from the other side of the causeway to drive here, they behave very differently. And when we drive down to Singapore, we behave very differently. And therefore, as a result of that, we have statistics to say 18% of us have anger problem, but I think it's all excuses. What do you say to that?
Puvesha, I mean, because, you know, that means we have the ability to stay calm. There are external factors that make us control our anger and stay calm. And there are law enforcement, stricter law enforcement, right? We don't have a choice. How do you explain that?
The answer to that from my perspective is that this is homegrown, comfort zone. So it's just like us, right? We have the ability to keep our mouth shut and not be mean. But why is it that when it's within individuals in our house, like maybe, you know, or someone that we're really close to, like our best friend, we can just curse in front of them and, you know, say whatever we want. But when we are out in a more professional setting, we're able to filter our words. Why is that so? So the element of control comes with comfort zone. In your country, your road, you somewhat know. Even those who drive from in the North-South Expressway, right? I mean, I'm from Ipoh, so we used to travel quite a bit. And for a fact, I know which area has got, you know, cameras and which areas don't. So it's fixed in us. We know, okay, if we speed here, we can slow down later. We know this is our home ground. When we go and drive in another country like Singapore, or when I was studying in Australia, when I was there, I never dared to speed even extra 10 kilometers an hour because I knew the consequences were larger. But also because in my country, I know that we have police blocks here or we have cameras here. Sort of knows our home ground. It's comfortable.
It'll be interesting to know how to study people coming across from the causeway to Malaysia, then stepping out of into a comfort zone, perhaps? Which sounds weird. Which sounds weird because comfort zone should be home, right? Which really sounds weird. How do we stay calm and control this anger if 18% of us have anger issues?
It's just like what Doc said earlier. Like to some degree, some of it excuses. Some degree, we are trying to understand human behavior by putting theories and trying to understand it, right? But beyond all that, there's also an element of what if this person is mentally unwell. All right. So when we look at how to manage anger on the road, I'm going to give you two different perspectives. So if we are looking at someone who is in a clinical level, so maybe, you know, anger is an issue that they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. It doesn't just happen on the road, but it happens in every aspect of their life, and it's causing them a lot of difficulties and others too. It is definitely time for them to get more, you know, more significant sort of treatment process, like, you know, go see a clinical psychologist, go see a counselor, work on it. There is obviously something, an underlying issue that is causing this amount of anger and aggression that needs to be worked on. But let's put that aside. That's a small clinical sort of population. What about the rest? So some of us, like you said, you know, we do curse here and there, someone overtakes us, you know. In those situations, in those normal sort of situations, we can control our anger by taking a moment and pausing for that moment that, you know, someone overtakes you, just pause for a second and see before reacting. So you're just trying to have a controlled reaction, trying to hold back your reaction instead of letting it happen automatically. So the whole idea of, you know, doing deep breathing relaxation or just trying to breathe and calm yourself down before moving forward, that's important. Next is also looking at the consequences of your actions. So if you were to react in that way, what is it? What's the harm that's going to come to you, and what is it going to cause the other person? Is it even worth it? Is your reaction to a person overtaking you, or your large aggressive reaction, is it necessary at that point of time? But the ability to do that only comes in if you have a better control of your mental health. So if those who don't, or those who are struggling with it, then that's when they need to definitely get a different sort of help.
We'll come back and find out, you know, how to sort of deal with a road rage aggressor. I don't know. I'd really like to know how to deal with one. I mean, I've not come in contact with one, fingers crossed. We also come back and talk about our authorities, how to improve conditions on the road, perhaps. We come back and talk about our driving schools. oh, I have big problems with our driving schools today. And so how do we nurture drivers with good driving behaviours and manners? Coming up next, if you have a question for us, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're talking about road rage today. Why does road rage happen? 18% of our registered drivers in Malaysia are labelled under the category of high anger drivers. That's really not a good number. We'll come back and continue this discussion up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivisodhi. Dr. George Lee in the online with me. He's not been here for a long time, thanks to the MCO.
You wish I'm there with
Yes,
you.
I do actually. Does that mean I won't see you till after the 18th, George?
I know. It's okay. Well, first of all, I'm COVID-free. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. And secondly, is that I'm really, really looking forward to seeing you when the MCO is a bit relaxed.
Okay. All right. We'll see you then, I'm sure. But on the line with us also, Purvesha Jagadeesan, a clinical psychologist, and Dr. Ahmad Azhar Abdul Rashid, a chief research officer at MIROS, which is the Malaysian Institute of Road Safety Research. We're discussing why does road rage happen. I just want to go back a couple of steps. When you said 18% of our registered drivers are labelled under the category of high anger drivers, do we know why, Purvesha? Do we have any idea why 18% of our drivers are high anger drivers?
Can we speculate at this stage and say that it could be the lifestyle that we are practicing? Maybe it's very stressed. Maybe we don't have proper methods of coping with our emotions. Maybe our parents or the older generation drivers are modeling really bad sort of driving habits and behavior on the road. There's several reasons for this, I'm sure.
Okay. One of the other things I was reading also is that we fall behind the US, Australia, Spain and Turkey in terms of being angry drivers. Azad, do we know why?
I believe you get that from the research. Well, the research was focusing on anger. So we use a same tool from those studies that has happened in US, UK, etc. So when using the same tool, and then you can have a overview comparison across countries, and it reveals that we are worse in a way from them. But those are, coming back to what I mentioned before, those are anger. I think what we need to focus more is the manifestation of anger, which is the aggression, because that what matters more, isn't it? If you feel angry but you are good in coping, you don't honk or you don't speed. I think we need to focus on aggression, one thing. If you ask me why, because talking about manifestation, it's about interaction between you and the environment. Even though you feel angry, but you have a high, we call it a perception of being caught. The perceived risk of meeting the police, so if that POBC, perception of being caught, is high enough, and then even though you feel angry, you will have that external factor to control, to stop you from manifest into aggression. So I think that there are many other variables that we have to look into that makes a difference on the aggression part.
Okay, so Muhammad Shani Abdullah has actually WhatsApped to say the lack of social sanctions against unethical, indisciplined acts, and also, as you said, poor enforcement allows or condones individuals reacting aggressively against others who challenge such bad behaviour. So there you go, that is very much it. So enforcement is a very huge area as well. What about in terms of our driving schools, Azad, please tell me, we're doing something about our driving schools.
When MIROS was established in 2007, we have together with other partners, JPG, of course, Ministry of Transport, we have revised the curriculum for driving curriculums. Let us take a step back. I think if you think about it, those students, they are in driving schools only for how many hours? And I don't think it's fair to put all the burden of changing the behavior that you learn from baby, in fact,
On the driving school.
Exactly, to driving school only. But it has got to be in many parties.
So how do we nurture drivers with good driving behaviors and manners? Does that mean we need to have better enforcement?
Enforcement is one thing. I'm not putting that aside because we have seen a proven effectiveness of enforcement in all parts of the world. But we have also need to look into how we work on the education part of it. It starts from you, actually, not you, us, ourselves. We have to also become a good role model to the kids, to the next generation, for example, because there are intergeneration risk transfer. You see your kids, they observe what you're doing when you're driving. So that's one thing. I think it's fair if you put into that perspective that everybody has to come together, including society.
Sure. Purvesha?
No, I completely agree with what Asazar is saying. It's about modeling behavior. At the end of the day, monkey see, monkey do. That's how we all learn a lot of things, and especially the younger generation. Right? So when we were younger, we learned driving, or we observed our parents or our caregivers, the adults in our family drive. We must have picked up a lot of these things, a lot of the ways of coping with that anger. It's like, again, like Dr. Azhar said, it's not about anger, but it's about the aggression. So where did that come from? Where did the kids learn? Where did the younger generation, where did they learn all this from? And when it comes to nurturing drivers, it has to be, we have to first show others or show younger generation what is good driving? What does it take to be a good driver? And I was also thinking, we could also maybe look at reinforcing the good behavior of drivers. And I think in the app that I knew and Niroz came up with, in doing the collaboration, they looked a lot at reinforcing good behavior. And I think that's something that we could also...
How do you do that? How do you do that? Do you reward good drivers or...
Yeah, why not, right? Like since compounding those who did not follow regulations, since that there's a lot of comments on how that's not doing a great job, why not look at giving, rewards, merit points to those who are doing great?
It'll be interesting how to measure that. If not road rage or aggressors, we might be speeding on the other side. We could be double parking this side. I mean, it's Malaysia. You just take your pick. We all fall into one category.
I mean, go back to how we are when we deal with children, right? So, in therapy, we say that when a child does a naughty behavior or an unacceptable behavior, we're going to put them on timeout, we're going to punish them and all that. But the idea of talking to them and punishing them or reprimanding them, that itself is attention. So the kid is happy with that attention. Any attention is good attention. Yeah. So could that mechanism be working with what's happening with compounding bad driving or double parking? Could that same mechanism be working here? So, I don't know, it's just something in my mind. Could we do it? Could we do a flip side of it? Why not, reward someone who has parked properly? Give a star to those who have parked properly or something.
Just scare the hell out of them. That's all I see.
Mira, Malaysian way will be give discount. You get vouchers.
Yeah,
that's what I said.
No, you can get choppy voucher.
I'm thinking a discount on my parking speeding ticket, for an example. George, would you have anything else to add on?
Well, actually, when Azad earlier on highlighted that we're worse than USA, both our guests today do not remember a Michael Douglas film called Falling Down. Do you remember Road Rage? He was stuck in the traffic, long lines, and then he was sweating. Suddenly he came out of the car, big guns, he was shooting people. That was this sort of like road rage that we used to think that Americans have. But if we're worse than that, this is really big problems on our side. And, guys, think about the statistics. It's that the number of people that kills is just quite staggering. I think, in conjunction with Chinese New Year, I will tell you what my mother says to me when it comes to anger management. My mother said, when you're angry with someone else, you're angry with yourself, right? Okay, so if you think about it that way, then you won't be angry with anyone else. Then we'll have a peaceful road and all over, right?
Wise words, absolutely.
I have an issue with that, though. If you're so angry with yourself, you probably end up in therapy eventually.
All right.
Which means that, doesn't it, Purvesha? Indirectly, that's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think that's the best thing.
But my mom said, don't be angry with people. Just be nice, because otherwise you just bring up your blood pressure. You're going to suffer yourself, right?
See, that's different from being angry with yourself, okay? That's it's a completely different meaning to it.
Okay.
Right. I've got one last question. With the various MCOs in place over the past year, traffic conditions we have noticed have changed, right? I mean, there are less cars on the road. But it has been a challenge with delivery riders on the road who have often taken on very risky behavior. Are there any indications that these will be a major problem? And do we know what drives this behavior? Besides the fact that I know they're trying to earn a living and, you know, get as many deliveries done as possible. But it is, you know, what are they, what's running in their heads? It is a risk at the end of the day. Bhuvesha? Okay, she's frozen, unfortunately. Bhuvesha, yes, go ahead, Azad.
Yeah. If you look at the statistics that I mentioned in the introduction, even though the trend is consistent, about 60, the majority are motorcyclists, but if you look at the proportion, the fatalities of motorcyclist victims increase about 3%, which means there are more motorcyclist victims during the MCO 2020, and we can attribute that probably to the increase of these food delivery services. So we don't have enough data to say that what is that a bigger that indicates a bigger problem, but I think that's something that worth worrying, especially when involved more cycling. We have to remember that human it's not mechanistic. So we interact with the environment. When they know that if they make more trips, they get more money. So that encourage all these aggressions and, you know, taking risks, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Tuvesha?
Again, the element of reinforcing that behavior is happening, you know. So you're rewarding with the reinforcement, so that's just going to increase that behavior.
Right. By rewarding the more trips and all of that. Okay. Yeah. All right. So there is a nationwide Safe Drive Saves Lives campaign to raise awareness on road traffic accidents, its causes and its implications. So just look for Safe Drive Save Lives Malaysia to find out more about this campaign. George, would you have a message for us?
Well, I guess for this year, hopefully we won't get that festivity rush. And then hopefully, you know, before each festivity in Malaysia, we always see that fatality. One of the good things this year with the interstate travel ban, hopefully we see less fatality. And hopefully we see no fatality at some point in our lifetime.
Yeah. And we become less angry people as a nation, isn't it? As drivers. Thank you all very much for joining me today. Dr. Ahmad Azad Abdul Rashid, Chief Research Officer at Mirrors, Bhuvesha Jagadeesan, a clinical psychologist, and my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in Doctor in the House on BFM 89.9.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.